Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, May 17, 2026. My name is Leia M., recovered compulsive overeater, and your moderator for today. The share ID numbers for Friday, May 15th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,463, that's 23463. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,464, that's 23464. This morning, A Vision for You presents the Step 11 Pause, Choosing God's Will. Step 11 states, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for his knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. OA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to compulsively overeat and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. By implementing steps 1 through 9, we have a transformation of thought and attitude, a change in the way we think, a change in the way we feel, a change in the way we behave. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once guiding forces of our lives, are cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions, ideas, and attitudes begin to dominate us. The steps continue to catalyze our inner growth, our new attitudes, and our new spirit. Now we continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Our recovery depends on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. The powerlessness over compulsive overeating that nearly destroyed us will return if we do not work on maintaining our contact with God. In step 11, we carry that goal further. We seek to improve the conscious contact with God that we have established in the previous steps. Step 11 reminds us that recovery is not just about stopping compulsive overeating. It's about building a daily spiritual connection that guides how we live. Step 11 encourages us to pause, listen, and become willing to seek guidance, asking God to direct our thinking and help us determine the proper course of action. Joining us today to elaborate on Step 11 and the pause is Stephen G., a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Stephen is dedicated to our 12-step way of life and carrying this message of recovery, and it's with great pleasure and appreciation that I welcome Stephen to the line. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you for that nice introduction. My name is Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Canada. And today I'm going to talk about the Step 11 pause, choosing God's will. And this is based on page 87, the paragraph where it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. So I'm going to give you a, first of all, welcome to everybody, welcome to any newcomers or people. I've certainly been there, and I hope you will hear something today that's useful to you. I'm going to share a little bit about my experience of compulsive overeating and recovery, but I'm not going to spend too much time on that. I'm going to talk more about the solution. Then I'm going to briefly touch on what is the problem and what is the solution as it's explained in the big book. then I'm going to expand on this idea of the step 11 pause and choosing God's will and the contrast with choosing self-will. Then I'll give you a couple of examples from my recent examples from my own life. So my story, I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I, much of my life, struggled with, I thought the struggle was with weight. Then I realized actually that the problem was eating. And then I realized with time that I actually have an illness, which is called compulsive overeating. And my peak weight, my qualifications, if you will, my peak weight was about 300 pounds. I gained and lost 50 pounds, I don't know how many times, maybe more than 10. I tried all the normal things that people do, exercise, diets, nutritionist, multiple gym memberships, personal trainers, etc. And I'd always end up back at the same place, completely out of control. I experienced a lot of the, so my disease of compulsive overeating, you know, one of its symptoms was obesity, morbid obesity. And I know that's not the case for everybody. We still suffer whether we're obese or not. But many of my indignities that I remember are related to obesity, not being able to fit into clothes, not washing clothes because for long periods of time because they'd get tight and uncomfortable, having stains on some of my clothes, my thighs rubbing together, pants wearing out. Because of my thighs rubbing together, not being able to buckle up a belt in an airplane seat. As a man, not wanting to swim with my shirt off because I had breasts. You know, seeing people when I had lost weight and then seeing them 100 pounds later and look on their faces, all those kind of indignities that it wouldn't make sense for me as I perceived myself as being normal. It wouldn't make sense for me to get myself in those situations, but yet they happened. And thanks to this program, that seems like a lifetime ago. In 2009, I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I picked and choose what I took, took what I wanted and left the rest, if you will, and picked and choose what I would do. I was quite selective about abstinence, selective about step work, and had predictable results. I had 3 relapses of increasing severity. They all ended up in the same place, which is me in my bedroom in the dark alone, extremely uncomfortable, wanting to kill myself and thinking the only way I could feel better is to eat. And with each worsening relapse, I became more and more willing. Eventually, I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I got abstinent, and certainly things were better. But in 2017, I came across this meeting and this group of people who were studying the Big Book, and there was something quite different about them. They were quite peaceful, calm. They spent very little time talking about food, and they were in healthy body weights, and they really simplified the nature of the problem and the solution by going back to these original instructions in this book that was written almost 100 years ago. And they talked about being recovered, which I had never heard that term before, and I wanted what they had, and so I started studying this Big Book. And the Big Book made things so much simpler. It explained this disease that I had. It took me a while to accept that, but I eventually accepted I had a disease. And it had 2 parts. It had this physical part, allergy of the body. There were some foods, ingredients, or eating behaviors I cannot handle like a normal person. They produce a phenomenon of craving. Once I start, I can't stop. And produce these consequences that I talked about before, these indignities. And no matter how many times I tried to stop, the second part of the disease would kick in, which is the mental obsession, which is that my mind will always tell me it's a good idea to go back and do it again. And so I go into this cycle would go on forever. And I eventually accepted that it was permanent. It was progressive. It gets worse over time. And it'd be fatal because it took me to a suicidal place. That would probably be the way that it ended. And the book explained to me that abstinence, just stopping wasn't the solution because abstinence reveals the problem. I become very uncomfortable when I'm abstinent. I might go through a brief withdrawal period, but then I become emotionally uncomfortable. The book describes restless, irritable discontent. And so that can't be the solution by itself, but the book explains the solution. It also has two parts. First one, entire abstinence. I must put down these foods, ingredients, and behaviors. And I was able to do that when people explained to me how this was happening and to get a reasonable plan of eating. But that by itself is not the problem. I need the second part, which is the spiritual experience, which removes this mental obsession. And then I can live this recovered life one day at a time. And that's what that's what's happened. That's the experience that I've had. And the solution it tells me is, or the problem actually, basically is lack of power because of these two features, allergy of the body, obsession of the mind. On page 45, I'm going to refer to a few different parts of the big book. And I'm also going to refer to a couple of places in the AA 12 and 12. But on page 45 in the chapter, We Agnosis, it says, because of these two features, allergy of the body, obsession of the mind, my problem is lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem, lack of power. And so this book gives me very specific instructions as to how to do that. And when I do that, somehow this power, which I certainly didn't understand and I certainly continue not to understand, basically works magic. And I'm able to lead a normal life. One day at a time, so long as I follow these instructions. And one of these instructions is on page 87, where it says, when agitated or doubtful, we pause. And we ask God for the right thought and the right action. Because once I've accessed this power, then it becomes my job to maintain access to this power. And the book tells me how I can lose access and how to maintain access or regain access to this power once it's lost. So according to these instructions, I put down the food, if you will. I was able to identify these foods, ingredients, behaviors that produce this phenomenon of craving, craft a reasonable plan of eating, and then take action to solve the actual problem. And so I work the steps. Steps, the action steps, really step 4 through 9. And then I was taught how to do step 10, which is just continue to take personal inventory. And I'm not going to go into that in this talk. But then I get become connected. And what does that mean? You know, to a newcomer or somebody who's in relapse, that sounds a little crazy. What does that mean to have a spiritual experience and to be connected to a power greater than ourselves? And essentially, basically, I'm not thinking about food. And I can follow this plan of eating, which seemed crazy when I was in the food, that I would be able to do that, but I can follow it fairly peacefully. And the book gives me a description of what that looks like on page 85. And some people refer to it as the 10-step promise. And it says, page 85, it says, I'm going to replace the word liquor with food, but we will see that our new attitude towards food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And I found that to be true. And anytime I tried to quote unquote control my eating before I had worked these steps, it would be like holding my breath. You knew that the next breath was going to be really, really big and really, really deep. And I wasn't comfortable. And I was always thinking about food. And this program is giving me this neutrality, this feeling of normalcy. But it comes with a warning. And the warning is, and it says it three times on this page, that this is how we will react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And then it goes on to say it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, but we're headed for trouble because compulsive overeating is a subtle foe. And then it goes on to say that for the third time, it says we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So these are warnings, but it gives me instructions on how to avoid these traps. And one of these traps is what we see in step 11 when we use this pause. So I've been through the steps. I've got this neutrality. I'm feeling good. Life is great. But then I have to go into life. And life is going to present me with some challenges. And I thought I would just have to, you know, put down the food. And I was very worried about doing step 4 or 5. I was worried about making amends. And yeah, sure, those were challenging things. But then I thought I was done. But in fact, not so. I have to have a series of actions that I do on a daily basis that help me to maintain this position of neutrality and actually increase that spiritual experience. And it will be life that's going to throw me off balance. But the book gives me instructions on how to deal with it. And in the preceding chapters, we're told what the actual problem is, because I thought my problem was food. But the truth is, I'm spiritually ill. I wasn't aware that I was. It was so normal for me to feel that way. But I was spiritually ill. And the reason I was spiritually ill is because I was abnormally self-focused and self-centered, but I wasn't aware of it. And the book tells us that's actually the thing that prevents me from having a connection to this power, whatever I choose to call it. I choose to call it God. And so essentially, as I walk through life now, I have two choices. I have the default choice, which is my natural way of thinking, speaking, and acting, which we'll call self-will. And we'll have a look at that in a minute. But then there's this other thing called God's will. And I have a choice. And the book is going to tell me how to do God's will. Very, very simple way. My default is going to be self-will. And what is self-will? Self-will is I will decide what to think, what to say, and what to do whenever I want. That's self-will. That's my normal way of thinking. God's will is I will seek God's guidance on what to think, on what to say, on what to do, and when to do it. Very, very different way of thinking. So what does self-will look like? And the book gives us quite a few examples. So if we go to page 60 talks about this idea of playing the director. That life is essentially like a play with many actors, many acts, a stage, and the way I think about it, I'm the director, and everybody is there to act in a way that suits me. And of course, I had no idea that I felt this way, because this is just my natural way of thinking. But the book tells me that, this is the bottom of page 60, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. Is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, the rest of the players in his own way. If only his arrangement would stay put, if only people would do as he wished. And it tells me that on that basis, I'm going to always be in collision with something or somebody, even if my motives are good. And further on, page 61, it gives me another description of what that self-will will be like. He's like the retired, bottom of page 61, he's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. Minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, the politician and reformer who are sure all would be utopia if the world, rest of the world would only behave. And basically, the problem is not me, the problem is everybody else. Everybody else would change, things would be good. Then it goes on to tell me a little bit more in the next paragraph, actually the next page, page 62, second paragraph, which says that I'm essentially driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So this is the self-will. This is my natural way of thinking. And as a result of this way of thinking, we go to page 66. Let's see. Yeah, the second last paragraph on page 66, it says, as a result of this thinking, the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill me, because I lack power. I've now accessed this power. And the thing that's going to block me from this power is resentments, fears, harms done to other people. So wrongdoings of others, even if they're just in my own head, which most of them are, have the power to kill me. And so that is self-will. So I'm faced with life. I have a choice now. My default is self-will, and the book is going to tell me how to choose God's will. And of course, before I came into this program, first of all, I didn't like the idea of God. Second, if you talk to me about God's will, I had no idea what that meant. And I certainly didn't think I had any choice. My way of thinking, my way of acting was the only way. But the program tells me quite differently. And what is it to seek God's, what is God's will? God's will is to seek God's guidance on what I should think, what I should say, what I should do, and when I should do it. And sometimes God's will is say nothing, do nothing, sit and wait further instructions. And so the book gives us lots of different examples of that. But we're going to go back to the paragraph that's really the topic of this talk. And I'm going to read it again, and I'm going to read it in detail. And so this is step 11. Step 11 essentially comes in four different parts. The first one is at night, and which is a nightly review. The second one is on awakening. Third one is when we face indecision. And then the final one here is when we're agitated or doubtful. And this is the hardest one for me because it requires me to be vigilant. There's no time cue, morning, night. It just requires me to be aware of what's going on with myself emotionally. And so this is the most difficult one for me to institute and takes ongoing trial and error. So it says here, bottom of page 87, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. Who are we asking? We're asking God. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times, each time, each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity. Efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Basically trying to arrange myself to suit myself, others to suit myself, and the world to suit myself. And it's telling me that that's actually foolish and burns up energy in ways that are not necessary, are not useful, are not helpful. And that's a new concept to me. So the pause. And of course, the natural self-willed way of thinking for me is just do stuff. Take action. It is not my nature to do nothing. But the book is telling me that actually I'm no longer the director. I'm the actor. And sometimes I need to sit and ask the director, what is my line? And sometimes the answer is, you have no lines in this scene. Of course, I think I have lines in every scene. The 12 and 12 expands on this concept. And so I'm just going to briefly reference the 12 and 12, which is on page. This is going to be on, actually, before we do that, I want to go to Bill's story briefly, which just follows up on the same thing, which is page 13 in Bill's story. He says exactly the same thing in different words. This is when he first begins to have a spiritual experience. He says here, I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. And then the AA 12 and 12, page 91. Again, same concept. The first paragraph says that, on page 91, says that people or new events may throw us off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. And what kind of mistakes are they making? They're talking about spiritual mistakes. Yes, I may make sort of actual human earthly mistakes, but I depend on constant access to this power. And so I may make spiritual mistakes that are going to block me off for this power. Increase resentments, increase fears, increase harms done. They're going to block me off from this power that I need. And it goes on to say, a couple of paragraphs down, our first objective will be the development of self-restraint. And we can more appropriately say God restraint, the development of self-restraint. This carries a top priority rating. When we speak or act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded and tolerant evaporates on the spot. One unkind tirade or one willful snap judgment can ruin our relation with another person for a whole day or maybe a whole year. Nothing pays off like restraint of tongue and pen. Say nothing, do nothing. Wait for further instructions. We must avoid quick-tempered criticism and furious power-driven argument. The same goes for sulking or silent scorn. These are emotional booby traps baited with pride and vengefulness. Our first job is to sidestep the traps. When we are tempted by the bait, we should train ourselves to step back and think. I would suggest this is, so the 12 and 12 is basically Bill Wilson talking. The big book, in my opinion, is divinely inspired through Bill Wilson. So some of the 12 and 12 has to be taken with a grain of salt. But I think what he's trying to say here is we should step back and pray. When we are tempted by the bait, we should train ourselves to step back and pray. For we can neither think nor act to good purpose until the habit of self-restraint has become automatic. Okay. Let's see. So now I'm going to share a couple of personal experiences. One, when I made the choice to use self-will. I don't know. I'm not even sure I made the choice. I didn't even think. And the second one where I followed the instructions in this book. So I work in a hospital, kind of a challenging environment. And I work with a lot of different people. And so there's ongoing communication. There's different responsibility roles. And sometimes we have to transfer responsibility from one person to another. And so I was working a night shift, and I had to transfer the responsibility of something to a colleague, which is his job. And so I went and talked to him. And his reaction, in my perception, was very argumentative and condescending. That's just the way he is. It's not personal. That's just the way he communicates. I've done a number of step 10s on him, and I don't usually react to him. But today there was no pause. It was just my emotional temperature was from zero to 100 degrees, and there was no pause. And I returned in kind, argumentative, and then it just escalated, and it ended with me shouting at him, amongst surrounded by other people are watching this. And then I walked away. And a number of things came from this. First of all, now I was angry. And all I could think about was how he was wrong. And the next thing I was going to say to him when I went back to argue with him again. But I have to keep working with him. We work in a healthcare environment, and the care of people depends on us working together. So immediately I'm starting to cause harm, not just for me, but for others. And I had to go on and continue working. But my mind was focused on this argument with this guy. So I'm no longer a channel for God. I'm no longer being useful to God. Now, thankfully, I've been in this program for a while, and I can't tolerate emotional discomfort for long. And it became clear to me that I'd done something wrong. So I went to my office and I sat down, and I finally asked God for the right thought and the right action. And I did a very brief step 10, meaning that I just, you know, I asked God to remove my resentment towards him. And I didn't share it with anybody. There was nobody to share with. But then I prayed for him. And it became clear I needed to make amends. And so I went back to him and said, I'm sorry, I lost my temper. Even though I could have gone back and said, you did something wrong, the book tells me what he did is irrelevant. I went back and said, I'm sorry, I lost my temper. And he immediately apologized and said he's sorry. He said he did something wrong. He's sorry about that. And everything was fine. And from the rest of that time on, everything was fine. But that could have escalated, and I could have damaged the relationship. And it could have blocked me off from God. Thankfully, I had other tools of the program that I was able to use, or other steps in the program that I was able to use to get back to being peaceful again. But that was a good example of how I was not being vigilant to what was happening, and therefore I didn't pause. I didn't ask God, what is the right thought? What is the right spoken word? What is the right action? So how not to choose God's will. So that's one example. And in the past, before this program, I mean, it would have just got worse and worse and worse. I would have eaten over it. I probably would have quit the job. I mean, it's funny now when I look at it. But so I'll tell you about the second one. So the second one, again, was recently. And I just happened to be at work. It wasn't work-related, but I was on a break work, sitting in our coffee room, and I was looking at my email on my phone. And we just passed tax time in Canada. And I just sent my tax information to my accountant, and I opened my email. There was an email from my accountant saying that I'd made a mistake in my calculation, and I owed many thousands more dollars to the tax agency than I thought. And there was immediate resentment towards my accountant, immediately resentment towards the federal government, immediate fear of my material security, and my gut reaction was to send a nasty email to my accountant saying, like, what are you doing? I mean, how could this happen? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I recognized that my emotions were getting out of control. And so I paused and I prayed and I asked God, what is the right thought? What is the right next action? And it came back to me, the right next action is do nothing, say nothing, type nothing. And don't even think about it for the rest of today. I had a day off the next day, come back and address it tomorrow. And so I got up and I walked and I went to the cafe in the hospital. And it's a chain cafe that most of the people working there are immigrants working, making minimum wage. And it became clear to me that, yeah, my problems are minor, minor, minor. God was showing me reality. And then I went back to work and I work in a hospital. And again, God was showing me reality. There's people with much bigger problems here that I want you to help than your tax problem. And then I went home and I still had resentment and fear. So I did like a step 10 on it, formal step 10. I looked at it, saw my part, shared it with somebody. And then the next day I addressed it and everything worked out fine. Everything worked out fine. And so that was one of these traps, potential traps that are placed as part of going through life. And I had a choice. And the book showed me how to choose God's will. And God's will keeps me connected to God. And it used to be I was worried about the food. I don't want to get disconnected to God, so I don't think about the food, go back into relapse. But now I want to be peaceful and I want to be useful. And God kept me peaceful and God kept me useful because I was willing to take these specific actions that are outlined in these steps. And I thank God for that. So the purpose of this talk today was the pause. And this is probably the hardest thing for me because it is not in my nature. I'm constant thinking, constant action. But this is where I become the actor. Again, this is how I become the actor or the agent, not the director, not the principal. This is where I can get instructions. And receiving instructions is based on having a concept of this power that works. Why would I pause and ask a power to help me if I didn't think that power had infinite intelligence, if I didn't think that power had infinite wisdom, if I didn't think that power had my best interests at heart, if I didn't think that power had infinite love? So it also forces me to look at my concept of this higher power. Is it working for me? And when I have the right power, right concept, I will turn to that power and then I will start to see the results. And when I start to receive the result, then I will go back to it over and over again. But it works, but it's not easy. but I'm very, very grateful for it. And that's actually all that I have to share today. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Stephen, for this beautiful, instructive, well-organized, and inspiring presentation this morning. Thank you so very much. The share ID for today, 23,465. That's 23465. Stephen's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so please do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Stephen by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Shanna C., Tennessee.
Good morning, Shanna.
Terry Beth.
Monica
S. Texas.
Terry Beth, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Diana Y., Philadelphia.
Diana Y.
Maura Z.
Monica.
Tony B.
There's a Monica in the back?
Yes. Monica S. in Michigan.
Okay, Monica S. Tony B.
From Massachusetts.
Who from Massachusetts?
Iona P.
Iona P.
Judith R.
Judith R. Okay, that's a good list. Let's get started on this. I've got Shanna C., Terry Beth, Diana Y., Mara Z., Monica S., Tony B., Iona P., and Judith R. Shanna C., go ahead with your question, please.
Good morning, Leah. This is Shanna C., Grateful Recovered Compulsive Overeater from Tennessee. Thank you for your service, and Stephen, thank you so much for your presentation. Absolutely agree with Leah, the well-organized and presentation of Step 11 and your practical implementation of the directions and explanation. And thank you. That said, my question is, establishing and maintaining conscious contact with the God of our understanding and, is the goal of Step 11. And I know in my own Step 11, I love seeing the active revealing of the God of my understanding to me when I follow these directions. And I would love to hear your experience in addition to the emotional stability that happens as a result of following the directions. What I would like to hear, too, is the miracle of the God of your understanding revealing himself to you in a very personal way to show that you have established conscious contact with that God. That's it. Hello?
Stephen, star one to unmute.
Okay, yes. Thank you, Shanna. Thank you for your question. Wow, that's a big one. I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer that. Well, there's just so many different areas, and many of them are subtle. They're not big, bright light things. Probably the biggest one, and this is not very dramatic, is that I had an idea of how my life should be, the things I would need in my life, whether that be personal possessions, social level status, relationships. Many of those things I don't have, if I compare them to, say, friends. So I'm not married. I thought I would be married. I don't own a house. I thought I would own a house. In my particular work, I thought I would work in a particular area that would be a little bit more flashy. But it's fascinating that God fills in what I perceive to be the cracks or the deficiencies. And I am as happy as anybody I know that has all these things that I thought I needed. And that's probably the simplest answer. I could go into detail on some other things, but that's probably the best answer. The things I thought I needed were things that I don't have in comparison to others. God has given me happiness. Because really what I wanted was the feeling that I would get from those things. And I can get that feeling from a relationship with God without having those things. That's how I'd answer that question.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Shanna C. Terry Beth, your turn.
Yes, Terry Beth from Texas. Thank you so much, Stephen. I've worked in the hospital too, and I love the way to hear placing principles above personalities. My question is, do you share about your program, about OA or 12 steps with your colleagues or other people, patients at work or even on the outside? How do you handle?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. I have shared it with the occasional patient. I don't know whether it's helped them or not. I haven't shared it with my colleagues. It's never come up. I have done a presentation once. I did an OA presentation at another hospital in the city I live in, not the one I work in, where I identified myself as a healthcare worker and just shared my experience. But I haven't shared it with colleagues. I don't have any problem with it, sharing it with colleagues, if it'd be helpful to them, you know, if it came up, but I haven't. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Terry Beth. Diana Y., your question, please.
Hi, I'm Diana Y. from Philadelphia. And I was wondering, I don't know if you're practiced at it and it just comes naturally, but I have a hard time remembering to do a 10th step on something because my default is to just walk away and let it fester. And I don't think at that time to go ahead and do a 10th step. So is it something that just comes naturally to you? I'm wondering.
Mm. Right. Thank you. Thank you. So I have tried every possible way to get out of doing virtually everything in this program. And it has been a multi-year negotiation process. And the only teacher for me was pain. So I tried to avoid all sorts of things, getting a sponsor, being entirely abstinent, doing a thorough step four, et cetera, et cetera. And the only teacher was pain. So with respect to step 10s, I'm not perfect, but I can't tolerate emotional discomfort. It's become quite clear. So the sooner I get rid of it, the better. Because I know that it won't go away. It'll just continue. And then within a period of time, then I'll start thinking that it's a good idea to get back to eating the food. So the only teacher is pain. And eventually I became willing to do it, but I can't tolerate emotional discomfort. And so I made a commitment to myself a while ago that I was going to, you know, step 10 is a muscle that needs to be exercised. And so I was going to do a step 10 every day so that I would exercise that muscle. And then it just becomes, kind of second nature. And I'm now much more aware of just emotional discomforts and I don't let them fester. Doesn't mean I'm perfect, you know, but eventually I get back to it.
Thank you, Diana Y., for your question. Maura Z., your question, please.
Thank you, Leah. Maura Z., gratefully recovered in Virginia. Stephen, thank you so much for your very clear presentation. I'm all about structure, so I was very appreciative of how you did your presentation. There's a very important question in the big book. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? And my question to you is, how did you create your conception of God?
Yes. I don't think there was ever a real formal process. I know there's people that, you know, it's part of their work in the steps. Their person guiding them gets them to write down something. For the most part, I began with just pretending and trying to get rid of negative ideas. So rather than creating a positive concept, just try to get rid of negative ones, which is this idea of the God that is kind of distant and judging, and that wasn't very helpful. And somebody, a wise person, told me that all I needed was to have an idea of this power that that was more powerful than this disease and liked me and wanted to help. Everything else I could get rid of and then build on it from there. But I like the idea of, you know, infinite intelligence, infinite wisdom. I also like infinite humor. That's one that I like. And so if I think of it that way, why wouldn't I stop and ask this thing, whatever I want to call it, what I should do? Yeah, so that's kind of my process. But it's an ongoing process because I have agnostic tendencies. My mind will, left to its own devices, will make God smaller and smaller and less important. And so it's an ongoing process. Yeah, thanks for your question.
Thank you, Morzi. Monica S. Your turn, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you, Stephen, and your calm spirit. I just had two quick questions. I know you talked about the how you're happy now and helping, and you know you help people. But I was wondering, if you had like a more specific answer to, like, how does God speak to you? Like where it says, we ask for the right thought or action. When you ask God for the right thought or action, like, how do you hear God, or how does God speak to you? And then my other question was, I know your talk was about pause, but I did want to know, do you have a daily or a regular spiritual practice, either on awakening or sometime during the day that you do on a regular basis? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. With respect to the first question, I mean, I don't see any bright lights. I don't hear God's voice. I haven't, that's not my experience. But if I pause, eventually things come to mind that wouldn't have come to mind otherwise. That's how I know. They wouldn't have come to mind otherwise. But is everything that comes into my thoughts coming from God? I don't know. I'm sure it's not. Some of it probably comes from my mind. But things just come to mind that make sense. There's some peace around to them. Around them, I wouldn't have come to that thought necessarily myself. That's how I know. But I think it's just an ongoing process. It just requires practice. And the key thing, I think, is just to do the pause. The chances of God's will coming to me or God's inspiring my thoughts is 100% greater if I pause and give God the opportunity. So in answer to the question, what comes to mind is something that wouldn't have come to mind ordinarily. There's some peace around it and calm around it. And then I have an idea that this is probably coming from God. And it's not always right. But and with respect to the second question, there's nothing special about me. And I'm no spiritual guru. I just follow the instructions in this book. It tells me exactly what to do. Tells me on awakening, here's what you should do. Choose a couple of prayers that you like. So I choose a couple of prayers that I like. At night, it tells me exactly what I should do. So when people ask me that question, I just refer them back to the instructions in this book that's been working for 80 years and has resulted in the recovery of millions and millions of people. We may add things that are unique to us because that's, you know, we want to add to that. That's fine. But I just point people back to the instructions, step 11 instructions in this book, what to do in the morning, what to do at night, what to do as we go through the day. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you so much. That was very helpful.
Thank you, Monica. Tony B., your turn.
Thank you, Leia. Thanks for your service, and thank you so much, Stephen. It was a really beautiful presentation. Thank you. And I really laughed out loud when you said, you know, the actor there asking the director, what are my lines? You have no lines in this scene. That really made me laugh. And I wondered if you could say how you deal with that kind of, you did perhaps touch on it a bit in another answer, but the kind of ordinary, the boring, the perhaps the bit left out, how does God comfort you?
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Can you clarify that question a bit? I didn't quite understand.
Well, if you've got no lines in that scene, and it's and you're kind of just, do you sometimes feel that you're just kind of waiting, or is life passing me by? Is sometimes a feeling I get anyway. Don't know about you, but like, actually, it's not true because program fills a lot of it in. I think probably, Stephen, to be honest, I just wanted to say how much that made me laugh. You don't have to answer a question on this.
Well, I think I can probably add something.
Thank you.
I think I can probably add something. I think that I want my life to go the way that I want it to. And I think I know what's best for me. And so, and I think that my time equals God's time, but God's time does not equal to my time. So that I think like, okay, I want my life at this stage to have this. I'm bored right now. I don't feel like this is going the way I want it to. And God's instructions are just relax. All is well. Everything is going according to schedule. You know, that's, but I often have to do step 10s on it because it, to get to that understanding, because it oftentimes will produce fear or resentment. You know, time is running out, or I'm wasting my life, or I need to do this. So often step 10s clarify that for me. So that's the answer to that part of the question. And when there's situations where I have no lines, so I'm a great, you know, giving people advice. You know, my sister just told me, oh, she's thinking of buying a house. And I had all sorts of ideas in my mind. And it was clear, my job is to shut up and just listen to her. You have no lines in this. Sit there, say nothing, do nothing. She's not asking you for advice. She's just telling you. Those are two examples. Of, yeah. Anyway, hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Tony B. Iona P. Your question, please. Iona P. Star one to unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. I had my phone double muted. Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Stephen. It was so easy to follow along with you. And I'm a newly recovered compulsive overeater, so I really appreciate this step 11 because my sponsor has asked me to, you know, send my evening review to her at night. And so I'm just wondering, because we really do step 11 throughout the day, do you send a step 11, like an evening review to anyone, a sponsor or a fellow? And what does it look like? What does it include? Thank you.
All right. So, I don't. It's because the book doesn't say that. Unless in my evening review, I realize that I'm carrying an emotional disturbance that's bothering me. And then I do a step 10, and step 10 often involves sharing it with somebody. So when I do my nightly review, I don't share it with anybody. It's just between me and God. And I can't remember if that was the whole question or if there was another question attached to it. Am I still being heard?
Yes. I think that was it, I believe. Okay. Yeah. Iona, did you get your answer that you were looking for? Iona P. Okay, let's take that as a yes. Judith R., your turn, please. Star one to unmute, Judith.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you so much. That was my question is, how long did it take you to get the idea and the willingness to pause? And how long does it take now?
Yeah, good question. Like I explained before, I've tried to wiggle out of every instruction in this book. And the only thing that takes me back is pain. And so I think, I'm not sure I can put an exact, it became clear to me once I started to follow the specific instructions, A, the food thinking went away, but also that I was more peaceful. And so I have a choice now. How long do you want to remain miserable? How much damage do you want to cause in your relationships with other people? And when it's put like that, then I become much, much more willing to pause when I'm agitated or doubtful. And so the instructions are there. It's really just a matter of willingness, and willingness for me only came through pain. I hope that's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Judith R. We have time for additional questions. If you'd like to pose a question to Stephen, star one to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Ken W.
Judith S. P.
B.
Judith S. P.
Yes, I have Ken, Judith S. P.
Cindy B.
Cindy B.
Joy M. B.
Sue L.
Joy M. B. Sue L. Anyone else? This will be the final invitation for questions, perhaps. Okay, let's get started. Ken W. H., your question, please.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Stephen. listening to you laugh and remembering our conversation at conference, you just exemplify Rule 62 for me. You don't take yourself too seriously, but you take the program seriously, and I'm really grateful for that. Question is, this is just an interesting awareness, and I just wonder if you can respond to it. You know, we talk about action, 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 that this is a program of action. And then we get to that paragraph at the bottom of page 84, and it reads basically in the passive voice. We receive, we are given, even the recoiling from a hot flame is a reflex that I've been given to do. I find that interesting. Do you have any thoughts on that, that there comes a time when action, it's the pause, needs to be just sit back for a minute.
right. Yeah, it's a good question. You know, if you have told me that to solve, if you will, my food, eating, obesity, or life problem, I would solve it not by going at it directly, by going at it in a completely different direction, which is spiritual. Take these actions here, and this problem will be solved. That's a novel idea. And so the actions that we take are not the intuitive actions. They're not the actions that we would learn out in the world to take to address these problems. So these are spiritual actions. And then when we take these spiritual actions, things start to happen to us, but they're not because we're doing them. Our actions are actually unblocking something that we've blocked and prevented this power from solving our problems. So yeah, it's a hard thing to grasp, I think, for us. This spiritual way of living, we take these actions and then this power solves these problems for us. Yeah, that's a different concept, but we gradually start to understand what's happening. I do think that the pause in itself, the pause is an action. It's much, much easier. It's much more passive to just do the same thing that I've always done. Somebody makes me mad, get mad at them. That's not very active. It's active to recognize that my emotional temperature is rising rapidly. It's active to actually shut my mouth. It's active to actually sit down and to say nothing. This actually is probably the hardest action of all the actions. And that's what I've learned. Thank you for your question, Ken.
Thank you, Ken. WH. Judith SP, your turn.
Good morning, Leah. Good morning, everyone. My name is Judith SP from Maryland. And Stephen, I very much took in your spirit today. It was wonderful. It really resonated a lot. Your examples really hit home for me as well. My question, and a couple of fellows who said, touched on this, I loved your laughter at yourself or at the situation or how you, you know, you do or don't take your will. I'm thinking, to keep it simple, do you believe there's a direct relationship between pausing and letting that joy and laughter, or not letting, intuitively having that joy and laughter emerge, or is it an inverse relationship? I'm not sure if I even need to go mathematical, because that's not my strong suit, but do you see a relationship between strengthening, pausing, and listening for God's will, and that joy and laughter that I can have about me, my life, what I did, and how I can do better? Thank you.
Thanks, Judith. Yeah, how should I answer that? I think the laughter comes from the acceptance of being an imperfect human being. And that's a product of working the steps. Work the steps. I think when I first worked the steps, I saw all these character defects and I was horrified. And then I wanted to get rid of them as quickly as possible. And of course, it became clear that that's not how this works. These will be removed, not on my time, but on God's time. And my part in it is just to keep recognizing them and give them back to God in the step 10 process. And the more I keep doing that, the more I chuckle at it, because I just see them over and over again and it's funny. And I don't blame myself. I mean, okay, I'm not perfect. Sometimes I do, but I don't blame myself or judge myself. And that comes from doing regular step 10. It's when, you know, I see this now when I didn't do regular step 10, you know, before, way back when, or fellows who don't do regular step 10, but then are just stunned and upset when selfishness reemerges itself. So it's a product of the program and product of getting closer to God, I think, that I now accept that I'm an imperfect human being. The only thing that's perfect is God. And so I can chuckle. And that, I think, relates to the pause, in that because I recognize I'm imperfect, when I'm getting agitated or doubtful, that's just it's just imperfection raising a red flag. And what should I do when imperfection is getting out of control? Stop doing what you're doing. Stop digging that hole, and then turn to infinite love, infinite wisdom, infinite humor. You know, what should I do now? I think that's all just it's all a natural progression of working the steps. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Judith S.P. Cindy B., your question, please.
Thank you, Leah. Thanks so much for your service today. And Stephen, thank you. It was really wonderful to listen to you. It felt very spiritually connected this morning. So my question is, have you ever gotten a message from your higher power that you did not like or that you felt resistance? I'll just give you some examples that I have in my own life, you know, like what my ideals are for my food, or maybe a relationship that I should be out of or in, or people that I don't want to be working with or people I do want to be working with, and just the things that have to do with people pleasing and, you know, even sometimes making amends that I don't want to make or really being honest with someone. I'm just wondering if you ever experienced resistance to messages that you got from your higher power.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I think it's a good question. And when I don't want to do a step 10, when I want to sit on emotional discomfort, when I want to sit in resentment, when I want to sit in fear, when I want to sit in self-pity, that's my higher power telling me something that I'm an imperfect human being, that I need a higher power. And you can sit there and pout for as long as you want, or you can do a step 10 and get reconnected to me. So that's one way that happens there all the time. So there are other more specific, more finite examples. Not so long ago, I was convinced that I needed to make a career change. And I'm not sure, it was a lot of self-will. It was based on self-worth. And I went through this whole process of looking into it, and had a position, thought I was going to get a position in this different phase or a different area. And then that door was closed. I didn't get it. And so I was quite angry at God because I thought God had led me there so that I would change the career. But I think I now see it as God had led me there to go through that process, to investigate it, and to come to see that it wasn't the right path for me, because I wouldn't have let it go. My self-will was so strong, I wouldn't have let it go. And God's will for me was not that. So I was a bit bitter and angry at God for a while. So I don't know what's best for me. I don't know how God works. All I can do is follow the instructions in this book and follow the steps. 10, 11, and 12, and just keep taking action, and eventually I'll arrive where I am supposed to be. Now, God allows me a flashlight a few feet ahead, but God doesn't allow me to see miles ahead. God sees miles ahead. That's not my job. So, and yeah, I fight that for sure. I fight it, but when I do the steps, I come back into peace around it. Yeah, hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Cindy B., for your question. Joy M.B., your turn.
Thank you so much, Leah, for hosting. And I can't tell you how important your talk has been. Thank you very, very much. The thing I've learned most of all in practicing this program is that silence is golden. And I want to ask, do you still do outreach calls? Do you sponsor? Do you go through all of the things that we are all doing if we're to keep our abstinence? And do you ever get exhausted with it and think, oh my? And then if you do, what do you do about it? Do you ask yourself, is this all there is? It's kind of an extension of Tony B's question in a way. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I do sponsor. Yeah, I have to sponsor. The book tells me that. Outreach calls, I do make outreach calls. I don't do them as much as I should, but I do. I don't do 3 outreach calls a day. I don't do that. I could do better on that. With respect to sponsoring and getting fed up, I do get sometimes frustrated because because I sometimes, you know, the outcomes aren't always what I want them to be. And the truth is I needed to be, have a choice between death and working this program in order for me to recover. And many people are not like that. And so many people I sponsor don't recover, or they disappear from the program and never hear from them again. And that can be a bit frustrating, but I have to realize that my job is just to show up. I don't know what God's plan is for them, and just keep showing up and not look to outcomes, just look to being of service. The program part of it has become weaved into my life. It's not my life, but it's become weaved into my life, and then I have to have a life as well. That's kind of my experience. Hope that's useful.
Thank you, Joy MB. Our final question for this morning comes from Sue L.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you. And Stephen, what a fantastic presentation. My question, I think, is sort of related to Judith, but with a little bit different focus. You know, we know that this is a program of attraction rather than promotion, and I think the attractiveness of the presentation, as I heard it, yes, it was informative, very much so. Yes, it was well organized, very much so. But the attractive portion for me was what I perceived to be just this lack of ego on your part, and you are putting this information forth from a neutral place. That may be my perception, but my question is that just inherent in your personality? Do you not struggle with an ego, or is this lack of ego a byproduct of the pause and working the steps? Thank you.
Great question. I'm laughing, not at you. I'm just laughing at the idea of me not having an ego. I should introduce you to some of my friends. it's absolutely a product of this program. Absolutely. It is not inherent to me. Inherent to me would be try to craft a presentation that's going to impress people, that, you know, I'll get lots of accolades and blah, blah, blah. And so this is a result of me, first of all, this is a result of me working the steps with respect to this program. I mean, I had a fear about doing this program. And so I did a 10 step before I did this presentation, I prayed to God to direct my thinking, my speaking and my actions, and protect me from character defects that'll get in the way, like, you know, approval seeking, perfectionism, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is an absolute product of the program. And I have a massive ego. Otherwise I wouldn't be here. And I might be able to pretend that I don't have a massive ego, but not for long. You would eventually see that. So I'm glad you enjoyed the presentation. I'm glad I came across that way. And I think it's God removing my character defects so that I can be more useful to people. Because who wants to hear a presentation by somebody who's not speaking calmly, who's not sharing honestly about their shortcomings. I'm glad you found it useful. And that's the answer to my question. I'm still laughing at the idea that I don't have an ego. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue L., for your question. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you so much, Stephen, for spending time with us this morning and providing such a beautiful, helpful presentation to all of us. The share ID for today, 23,465. That's 23465. We will now close from page 164 in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.